Okay, so I would, so this verse here is the last verse, which is actually at verse 82. However, I will be reading from verse 73 of the 7th chapter of the Magdalena, because obviously those don't have purport. So this is the first verse that has a purport. So let's just go for the classical Bengali. Actually, this first one is Sanskrit, actually. Then the classical Bengali, then we'll go into the relevant verse. The hearts of those above common behaviour are sometimes harder than a thunderbolt and sometimes softer than a flower. How can one accommodate such contradictions in great personalities? Lord Nityananda Prabhu raised Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and with the help of his men saw him to his home. Immediately all the devotees came and partook of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's something or other, not sure what that says. Anyway. Afterwards, Gopinathacharya, Mahaprabhu's company. Afterwards, Gopinathacharya came with the garments and prasad. All the devotees followed Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to a place known as Alinath. There, they all offered respects and various prayers. In great ecstasy, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu danced and chanted for some time. Indeed, all the neighbours came to see him. All around Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is also known as Gaurahari, people began to shout the holy name of Hari. Lord Chaitanya, immersed in his usual ecstasy of love, danced in the midst of them. The body of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was naturally very beautiful. It was like molten gold dressed in saffron cloth. Indeed, he was the most beautiful for being ornamented with ecstatic symptoms, which caused his hair to stand on end, tears to well in his eyes, and his body to tremble and perspire all over. Everyone present was astonished to see Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's dancing and his bodily transformations. Whoever came did not want to return home. Everyone, including children, old men and women, began to dance and chant the holy names of Sri Krishna and Gopal. In this way, they all floated in the ocean of the love of Godhead. So now we come to the verse that's on the board, I believe. Yes. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Upon seeing the chanting and dancing of Lord Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Lord Nityananda predicted that later there will be dancing and chanting in every village. So, yes, so Srila Prabhupada makes a point of making a purport for this one. This prediction of Sri Nityananda Prabhu is applicable not only in India, but also all over the world. That is now happening by his grace. The members of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness are now travelling from one village to another in the Western countries and are even carrying the deity with them. These devotees distribute various scriptures all over the world. We hope that these devotees who are preaching the message of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu will very seriously follow strictly in his footsteps. If they follow the rules and regulations and chant 16 rounds daily, their endeavour will preach the cult of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu will certainly be successful. Om Akhyanam Tiridam Darshandalangara Shlakaya Jaksu Omrisham Yanya Sasmai Sri Gurve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Sapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Garamayam Dadanti Svaparantikam He Krishna Kuruna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopisha Gopi Kanta Ratan Kanta Namostate Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pastaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhaktivedanta Swamini Chinamine Namaste Sasvati Devi Gurvani Pacharine Nivasesha Shunyabadi Pashachade Satarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Si Advaita Radha Sivasari Guru Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Upon seeing the chanting of dancing of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Lord Nityananda predicted that later there will be dancing and chanting in every village. So very, very, almost something very, very fundamental, isn't it, Govinda Prabhu, to ISKCON and its mission, very much so. In fact, it's based on that, actually. as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself demonstrated. Of course, he was no ordinary personality. He was the incarnation of Radha and Krishna combined. Thus, he was showing, as we saw, we heard about in earlier verses, he was exhibiting ecstatic symptoms, hair standing on end, tears shooting from his eyes. I'm not sure if that happens on the streets of Watford quite yet, but we're working on it, aren't we? But no, I mean, obviously, you know, we are putting ourselves in touch and sharing others the glories of the holy name. So this is very, very important, I think. So, in fact, just for some historical context, at this point in the Majjhalila, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is a sannyasi now, and he was on a two-year tour of South India. And it was calculated he must have walked on foot, of course, about something like 4,000 miles during those 2 years. So the mathematicians amongst us can work out an average of how many miles he must have worked today. I'll leave that for you. Yeah. Anyway, of course, you know, it was a lot anyway, 4,000 miles walking on foot, of course, with his associates. And of course, this marked the beginning, in many ways, of the mass propagation of the Harinam Sankirtan movement and the public chanting of Hare Krishna, of course, of which this International Society for Krishna Consciousness is famed, of course, very much so. Of course, before that, we had the, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was younger, when he was known as Nimai Pandit, he organised the mass rally against the oppression of the Changkasi, of course, in Navadweep. So it was a mass demonstration, the chanting of the holy names, and thousands of people took part. And yet, importantly, it all ended in diplomacy and dialogue, and friendship, actually, with the Changkasi. And even today, you can actually visit the Changkasi's Samadhi in Navadweep as well. So, chanting the holy names and the congregational chanting is always inclusive. It is always bringing about peace, and it is always a unifying factor. But at the same time, in the pastime of the Changkasi, Mahaprabhu had to make his point as well. But after that point was made, everyone was purified by the holy names, and of course Lord Nrisingadeva as well. Although I won't go into the details of the Changkasi Leela. But nevertheless, very interesting and relevant, I think. Of course, after this, when we get to the later Leelas of Mahaprabhu, he spent a lot of time, of course, in Jagannath Puri. And I'll get some figures for you here. So he was doing regular Sankirtan, about on an average, in Puri, about 4 hours a day. 4 hours a day he was going out on Harinam Sankirtan. Of course, most most famously, of course, the Lord Jagannath, the Rath Yatra as well, where he was, you know, the whole of the town was up in arms, chanting the holy names of the Lord. Even Maharaj Prataparudra, who Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't want to publicly associate with, because he was a kshatriya, he was a worldly man. So Mahaprabhu, being a sannyasi at this point, was only interested, you know, he had his inner circle. But at the same time, he was embracing everybody, men, women, children, there was the police, there was, everybody was there, they were chanting the holy names and watching and staring at Mahaprabhu in ecstasy, looking at this. Who is this person that's leaping so many feet into the air and exhibiting so much love of Godhead? Nityananda, the whole Panchatattva, of course, were present. It must have been an amazing Rathyatra. Isn't it incredible when you think about it? And of course, these huge, huge carts carrying Jagannath Baladev and Subhadra as well. Again, of course, it is of course relevant that Srila Prabhupada himself made a point of establishing Rathyatra in all the major cities of the world, of course, as well. San Francisco, New York, London, and so forth. So you could argue that Srila Prabhupada is very much the international ambassador, let's say, of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission, very much so. Because before Srila Prabhupada, of course, although there were noble attempts to do so, there was no significant presence of Mahaprabhu's movement, actually, outside of India. Of course, Srila Prabhupada kind of put a stop to that and very much took it around the world. So it's very much understood that Srila Prabhupada is a transcendental general. That's how I think Bhakti Chu Swami once described Srila Prabhupada in respect to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So very, very important. We cannot underestimate Srila Prabhupada's contribution, actually, in spreading this mission. So what I wanted to do, because obviously this class is focusing on Harinam Sankirtan, I wanted to quote a few other verses of the Bhagavatam, and where Prabhupada himself talks a little bit about Harinam Sankirtan. So this is the purport of the Bhagavatam 7938. Prabhupada writes, "The entire Krishna consciousness movement is based on the principles of the Sankirtan movement inaugurated by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Therefore, one who tries to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead through the medium of the Sankirtan movement knows everything perfectly." This is Bhagavatam 8.5.23. "Simply by accepting the Sankirtan movement and chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, the fallen souls of this Kali Yuga will be delivered." Let me do a few more, because I firstly find them very inspiring. And I'm actually preaching to myself. I realise I'm not actually going out on Sankirtan, Harinam Sankirtan enough. I actually have great admiration here for Govinda Prabhu. I think, how many stations have we actually done around Greater London now?
40.
40. And by the end of the year, you hope to do about 125 or... And that, of course, will be in honour of Srila Prabhupada's 125th appearance day. 125 years this year since Srila Prabhupada was born as Abhay Charan on this planet. So it's a very noble thing to do, especially in the nation's capital. So that's very, very wonderful. And I feel humbled, actually, about that what the group are doing there. Oh, no, it wasn't my idea. You're doing it. Yeah, it was my idea, but you're actually doing it, so you get the credit. Purport in Srila Prabhupada, on the Bhagavatam by Srila Prabhupada, 5.19.24. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the inaugurator of the Sankirtan movement. "Anyone who performs Sankirtan to please the Lord is very, very glorious. Such a person has perfect intelligence, whereas others are in the ignorance of material existence." So, anyway, that was me described there. Purport of Bhagavatam 8.14.6. "Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in this age of Kali, and he will be easily satisfied if the Sankirtan movement is spread vigorously all over the world." Of course, this is very much also in Prabhupada's mood. We are not misers, the idea of we only want to chant for our own benefit. This is not actually the mood of ISKCON. We only have our own circle of friends, and we only we work on our own sadhana. Those are there, actually. We have to do that as well. However, if we're not sharing it or preaching the holy names, whether it's in the form of Harinam Sankirtan or book distribution or some other preaching, or preaching on Zoom or emails or whatever form it may take, Instagram, social media, whatever form it may take, that is also, you are also part of the Sankirtan movement, and that is also glorious. But if you're not doing this, then you are described to be a miser. So, of course, again, this is very much in the mood of Srila Prabhupada, and of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and our disciplic succession. Let me go on. Okay, this is the introduction to the Srimad Bhagavatam that Srila Prabhupada writes. "The wild tigers, elephants, bear and deer all together accompanied the Lord." Of course, this is about Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the forest. "And the Lord accompanied them in Sankirtan. By this he proved that by the propagation of the Sankirtan movement, even the wild animals can live in peace and friendship. What to speak of men who are supposed to be civilized?" So, of course, it's not just restricted to the human species, it would appear. Even tigers were, can imagine that actually, that even tigers are taking part in the Harinam Sankirtan movement, and elephants and bears and so forth, and deer. Of course, Srila Prabhupada here is very subtly also more or less saying here that an uncivilized and uncultured human society is non-different from animal society. So if the lions and tigers can benefit from the holy name, therefore so can human beings, even the human beings of the Kali Yuga, who in one sense, many of which are living like animals, eating, sleeping, mating and defending, without any of the dimension in their life, without the spiritual understanding or the spiritual dimension. But what do we have? Do we have anger? No, we have pity. We have mercy. This, again, mercy is an important pillar of the Sankirtan movement, because at least speaking for myself, if I didn't hear the holy names or whatever, I would also be like that, And like that. So in other words, we shouldn't think ourselves to be superior oh, well, I've got access to something and you haven't. No, it's our obligation to say, look, if I didn't have Srila Prabhupada's mercy, I would also be there wasting my human form of life. So it is my duty to spread the holy names of the Lord. I think that's quite an important point. So it has to be done significantly. It has to be done with humility as well. Because if we think we're the doer, if we think we're distributing the holy name, actually we're not. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is distributing the holy name, and we are simply instruments, tools, limbs. This is let's do something from the Bhagavad Gita 3.10 by Prabhupada here. Other yagyas described in the Vedic literatures are not easy to perform in the age of Kali, but the Sankirtan yagya is easy and sublime for all purposes. I mean, that's important. Of course, we are aware of that. Other prescribed methods, especially recommended in other yugas, for example, huge sacrifices and so forth, very expensive affairs using tons of ghee, actually. Elaborate deity worship, and of course, in the Sakti Yuga, austere meditations, more or less spending one's whole life in deep meditation like that. Again, not recommended, or at least not practical for the streets of Watford and the streets of London, I doubt. So let's do a few more quotes here, because I'm in the mood for it. This is something from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Anchalila 2013. By performing congregational chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, one can destroy the sinful condition of material existence, purify the unclean heart, and awaken all varieties of devotional service. So I think that's very, very important there. I think what I'll do is, let's do one more, then I'm going to do a quote from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. This is a letter Prabhupada wrote to Achyutananda in 1975. Sankirtan will always be appreciated because it is the blessings of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu on the people of this fallen age of Kali. So it's always appreciated and is always very much central to ISKCON's existence. What I wanted to do is finish off this section of quotes by quoting from Bhaktivinoda Thakur, of course, the father and of Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, who himself, of course, was the Diksha Guru of Srila Prabhupada. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur made a number of predictions from his house there in Mayapur. He would even saw the temple across the river Jalangi there, which is the temple of the Vedic planetarium. He foresaw these things. But this is one of his most famous predictions. He says, "Soon the chanting of Hari Nam Sankirtan will spread all over the world. Oh, when will that day come when people from America, England, France, Germany, Russia will take up kartels and madangas and chant Hare Krishna in their towns?" So wonderful, wonderful prediction. Now we have to also understand that he made that prediction. I don't know exactly what year it was, but it was, I would say 19th century, I would say. But of course, India was under British occupation at the time as well. And of course, they didn't have the travel available in those days. And it must have been a very amazing prediction. It would have been very, very difficult. It wasn't very obvious at the time that was actually going to happen, because many parts of India, of course, in fact, at the time of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the Sankirtan movement, Lord Chaitanya's movement, was actually in a lot of disrepute. The Mayavadi was a threat in the area, as well as, of course, Sahajism was also very prevalent. People jumping the gun, as it were, getting too much into the intimate pastimes of Krishna without actually the cultural steps and regulatory principles that is the foundation of the philosophy. So at the time, the movement was actually in disrepute. So for Bhaktivinoda Thakur to actually sit there and have this vision of Mayapur and the vision that this would be the centre of this movement that would actually be spread in every town and village was quite extraordinary at the time. Of course, it wasn't really even, let's say, believable for most people, I imagine, until Srila Prabhupada came. So again, more evidence of Srila Prabhupada's important position. Just so you know, I have to finish in about something like 20 minutes, because I think they've got a function here for the Krishna Club, and we don't want to deny them that. So what I wanted to do, I thought it'd be quite, I was reading the Prabhupada, Your Ever Well Wisher book. Every now and then I try to return to that book. Has everyone read that book, by the way? Everyone knows it. It's usually a book that people read kind of fairly early on in their life in Krishna consciousness, because it's very important to understand who Prabhupada is. So I went back to it a few weeks ago and thought, wow, it's amazing. So I found, thinking about this verse, I found the part about Tompkins Square Park, which I guess you could say was one of the first initial congregational chanting of Hare Krishna outside of India. That was in Tompkins Square Park in Manhattan, New York City. So very, very fascinating, actually, how Prabhupada did this and encouraged everyone. Of course, by that time, he'd already been preaching in Butler, Pennsylvania, in the Bowery, and, of course, in 26 Second Avenue in the Lower East Side in Manhattan. But up to then, it, of course, everything was, you know, wasn't as public as what was about to occur in Tompkins Square Park. So let me read and share some of this with you. Of course, this the date, of course, is Manhattan, October the 9th, 1966. The park's 10 acres held many tall trees, but at least half of the park was paved. A network of 5-foot-high iron fences weaved through the park, lining the walkways and protecting the grass. The fences on the many walkways and entrances to the park gave it the effect of a maze. Since the weather was still warm and it was Sunday, the park was crowded with people. Almost all of the space on the benches that lined the walkways was occupied. There were old people, mostly Ukrainians, dressed in outdated suits and sweaters, even in the warm weather, sitting together in clans, talking. This is October the 9th and it's warm weather, so it's obviously not in the UK. Of course, New York. Excuse me, are we talking? There were many children in the park as well, mostly Puerto Ricans and African Americans, but also fair-haired, hard-faced slum kids racing around with balls and frisbees. The basketball and handball courts were mostly taken by the teenagers. As always, there were plenty of loose running dogs. Today, a bench had been taken over by several conga and bongo drummers, and the whole park pulsed with the demanding rhythms. Of course, this was part of the, to some degree, part of the counterculture. Some people call the hippie culture, of course, of the late 60s, that people were, I suppose, rebelling against being drafted for Vietnam and so forth, and were looking for alternative ways of living. And the hippies were there, different from the others, the bearded bohemian men and their long-haired young girlfriends, dressed in old blue jeans, were still in an unusual sight. But even in the Lower East Side melting pot, their presence created tension. They were from middle-class families, and so they had been driven to the slums by dire economic necessity. This created conflicts in their dealings with the underprivileged immigrants. And the hippies, well known for drugs, their revolt against their families and affluence, and their absorption in the avant-garde sometimes made them the jeered minority amongst the neighbours. But the hippies just wanted to do their own thing and create their own revolution for love and peace. So usually they were tolerated, although not always appreciated. There were various groups among the young and hip at Tompkins Square Park. But whatever the hippies' diverse and interest and drives, the Lower East Side of Manhattan was an essential part of the mystique. It wasn't just a dirty slum, it was the best place in the world to conduct the experiment in consciousness. Srila Prabhupada, of course, known affectionately by his disciples in those days as Swamiji. So if I say Swamiji, forgive me, I'm just reading from the book here. Swamiji entered with his followers and sat there. Three or four devotees who had arrived ahead of him selected an open area in the park, put out an oriental carpet and sat down on it, and began playing kartals and chanting Hare Krishna. Immediately, some boys rode up on their bicycles, just short on the edge of the carpet, and stood astride their bikes, curiously staring. Other passers-by gathered around to listen. Meanwhile, Swamiji, accompanied by half a dozen disciples, was walking the 8 blocks from their storefront of 26 Second Avenue. Brahmananda carried the harmonium and the Swami's drum. Kirtananda, who was now shaven-headed at Swami's request and dressed in loose flowing canary yellow robes, created an extra sensation. Drivers pulled their cars over to have a look, their passengers leaning forward, agape at the outraged dressed and shaven head. As the group passed the store, people inside would poke each other and indicate the spectacle. People came to the windows of the tenements, taking to the Swamiji and his group as if a parade were passing. Tough guys especially couldn't restrain themselves from reactions. "Hey, Buddha," they taunted. "Hey, you forgot to change out of your pajamas, man." They made shrill screams as if imitated Indian, American Indian war whoops as they all heard in Hollywood westerns. Okay, they were pretty, they didn't know the difference. No one on the street knew anything about Krishna consciousness, nor even of Hindu culture and customs. They didn't know what to make of the Swamiji. He was different. Was he a Buddha? Nevertheless, they were suspicious. Some, however, felt sympathetic towards the stranger who had come to their town, who was apparently a very dignified person on a peaceful mission. "What are they, communists?" While the young taunted, the middle-aged and elderly shook their heads or stared, cold and uncomprehending. The way to the park was spotted with blasphemies, jokes and tension, but never any violence. Today, the ethnic neighbourhoods just assumed that the Swami and his followers had come onto the streets in outlandish costumes as a joke, as a stunt, just to turn everybody topsy-turvy and cause stares and howls. They felt that their responses were only natural for any normal, respectable American slum dweller. Swamiji had a way of holding his head high, his chin up, as he walked forward. It made him look aristocratic and determined. His vision was spiritual. He saw everyone as spirit soul and Krishna as the controller of everything. Yet aside from that, even from a worldly point of view, he was unafraid of the city's pandemonium. After all, he was an experienced Calcutta man. That was no small city. The kirtan had been going on for about 10 minutes when Swamiji arrived, stepping out of his white rubber slippers. Just as if he were home in the temple, he sat down on the rug with his followers, who had now stopped their singing and were watching their Swami. Swami smiled. Looking at the group, he indicated the rhythm by counting, then began clapping his hands heavily as he continued counting. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. Then the cartels followed, at first in wrong beats, but he kept the rhythm by clapping his hands. And then, quickly, they got it. Clapping hands, clashing cymbals, artlessly to a slow, steady beat. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Ruta Padakamalam. His voice was sweet like the harmonium, rich in the nuances of Bengali melody. Sitting on the rug under the large oak tree, he sang the mysterious Sanskrit prayers. None of his followers knew any mantra apart from Hare Krishna, but they knew Swamiji, and that was most important. Dogs came by, kids stared, a few mockers pointed fingers. "Hey, who's that priest, man?" But his voice was a shelter behind the clashing dualities. His boys went on ringing the cymbals. They would not stop. Swamiji sang prayers in praise of Srimati Radharani. Each word passed down for hundreds of years by the intimate associates of Krishna was saturated with deep transcendental meaning that only he at the time understood. But it didn't matter. Swamiji then chanted and danced with him, and now his followers wanted that too. They wanted to be with him. Then he began the mantra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. They responded, gathering heart, ringing cartels and clapping hands. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. Again, he sang it alone, and they stayed hanging closely on, each word clapping, beating cymbals, and watching him looking back at them from his inner concentration, his old age wisdom, his bhakti. Swamiji played his small drum, bracing it against his body and with his right hand playing the intricate madanga rhythm. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. He was going strong after half an hour, carrying with him an interested onlookers gathered, and interesting as interested onlookers gathered in great numbers. A few hippies sat down on the edge of the rug, copying the cross-legged sitting posture, listening, clapping, trying the chanting, and the small inner circle of Prabhupada and his followers grew as gradually more people joined. Low musicians were almost always loitering in that park, and when they heard they could the Swamiji chanting, they were also most welcome, so they joined. As musicians joined, more passers-by were drawn into the kirtan. Swamiji had been singing both lead and chorus at that point, and many who had joined now sang the lead part as well. So that was a constant chorus. During the afternoon, the crowd grew to more than 100, with a dozen musicians trying with their bongo drums, bamboo flutes, metal flutes, mouth organs, wood and metal clackers, tambourines and guitars. What a spectacle it must have been. It wasn't someone else's yoga retreat or silent peace vigil, but a pure chanting be-in of Bhaktivedanta Swami's own doing. It was a new wave, something everyone could take part in. The community seemed to be accepting it. It was becoming so popular that the ice cream vendor came over to make sales. Beside Prabhupada, a group of young, blonde-haired boys, 5 or 6 years old, were just sitting around. A young police boy stood staring. Swamiji motioned to his disciples, and then he got up and started dancing. As they danced, shifting their weight from left foot to right foot, striking a series of angelic postures, their large red chanting beads around their necks, they were doing the Swami step. Swamiji gave a gesture of acceptance by typically Indian movement of his head, and then he raised his arms, inviting more dancers. More of his disciples began dancing, and even a few hippies got up and tried it. Swamiji wanted everyone to sing and dance in the Harinam Sankirtan. Here and there throughout the crowd, chanters were enjoying private ecstasies. A girl with her eyes closed played finger cymbals and shook her head in a dreamy way. A Polish lady with a very old, worn face stared incredulously at the girl. The autumn afternoon sunlight fell softly on the group, spotlighting them in the golden glow with long, cool shadows. The harmonium played a constant drone, yet the total sound of the instruments blended, and Swamiji's voice emerged above the mewling tones of each chord. And so it went on for hours and hours. Everybody stayed, no one left, and the crowds gathered. Finally, Swamiji stopped. Immediately he stood up, and then everyone knew he was going to speak. The autumn sun was shining on the park, the atmosphere was peaceful and the audience attentive. He began to speak. The chanting of Hare Krishna has been introduced 500 years ago in West Bengal by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. His disciples sat attentively. Swamiji stood erect by a stout oak tree, which seemed perfectly placed. He went on to explain there are 3 platforms, sensual, mental, and intellectual, and above them is the spiritual platform. The chanting of Hare Krishna is on that platform, and it is the best process for reviving our eternal blissful consciousness. He invited everyone to attend the meetings at 26 Second Avenue and concluded his brief speech by saying, "Thank you very much. Please chant with us." Then he sat down, took the drum, and the kirtan started again. It's really nicely written, isn't it, this book? It's nice. I'll just finish off now. He knew that this was the desire of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his own spiritual master. Even though caste consciousness Brahmins in India would disapprove of his chanting with such untouchables, but Swamiji explained that it was in full accord with the scriptures. The Bhagavatam had clearly stated that Krishna consciousness should be delivered to all races. Everyone was a spirit soul, and regardless of birth, could be brought to the highest spiritual platform by chanting the holy names. Never mind whatever sinful things they were doing, these people were perfect candidates for Krishna consciousness. Tompkins Square Park was Krishna's plan. And these people were members of the human race. And the chanting of Hare Krishna was the Dharma for this age of Kali. So I thought, it was a wonderful kind of thing to share there. And that's what I was thinking of when I saw the verse that I was reading today about Harinam Sankirtan. So in other words, this is not just something which was relevant in the 15th century in Bengal or South India or in Puri or in Vrindavan. This is something relevant today which we can participate in as well in our towns, in our neighbourhoods, in every town and village. Interesting enough, I'll tell you this story. Someone sent me a picture of the other day. It was a couple of, they were devotees. They were actually with the Madanga and cartels, and they're actually in Antarctica. In Antarctica, yeah. And I have to admit, I was quite. I don't know what they were doing in them, whether they lived there permanently or whether they were a couple of doctors or something, or scientists doing something, working on the South Pole doing some research. But nowadays, you can actually invest in. You know, you have to pay money, quite a lot of money. You can actually have a tour of Antarctica around the circumference of Antarctica like that as well. So that's the flat Earth theory gone, I'm afraid. And there's actually snow behind them, and they're actually there in their woolly clothes at the Madanga. So it's not just London or New York, it's also Antarctica. Even the penguins get the mercy, you see. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had the tigers, and he had the deer, and he had the bears, and now even the penguins of Kali Yuga are hearing the holy name. So it's a very exciting thing to be part of, actually. I just wanted to say, okay, what we'll do is, I was very politely asked as well, so I don't mind, to finish in about 5 minutes from now. So if we have any questions or comments or other types of contributions, then maybe now would be a good time. Prabhu, Hare Krishna. Oh, you've got.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you so much for your class and for sharing the wonderful excerpts from the Leelamrita or the Ever Well Wisher. I said a question. So you mentioned, the verse is obviously talking about in every town and village, everyone should will chant the holy names. One proper disciple was asked, how do we go deeper into our practice? Because you also mentioned that, it's not just about deepening our practice, but it's about sharing that with others. And the response he gave was that even from Prabhupada is that we should share it with others. And by sharing it with others, Krishna impels us to the realization to deepen in our understanding of the knowledge. Now, as time is going by, we hear this narrative that's developing that obviously everything is service. The pujari on the altar is doing service. It doesn't matter what services are going on. But to some degree, it seems that everyone, regardless of what service they're doing, should be going out on Harinam Sankirtan and trying to spread the holy name. So I just wanted to get if there's a clarification.
In pujaris, for example, they're actually preaching also, for example, or cooks are preaching, they're distributing prasadam. Or pujaris, for example, think of how many thousands of people come and take darshan, and they come in, and then they hear the holy name, and they come to the festivals. And without the deities, then there'd be less people, because darshan is very important and popular, especially in Indian culture. So they're preaching as well. Yeah, there are different forms of preaching. But according to the verses we're looking at today, amongst the most potent for this age is spreading the holy names as in the public. Because a lot of people won't come to the temple or won't take a book or whatever. So, and sometimes, but they haven't got a choice if they're in the high street and they can hear Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Or even actually hearing the cartels is actually very potent. I don't know about you, have you ever kind of like just heard a Harinam in the background somewhere? And you're too far away to hear the actual chanting, but you can hear the cartels and the drums. And it's like something that's penetrating from the spiritual world. Somehow or other, just outside of Marks and Spencer's or Costa Coffee or whatever it might be. It's almost like a mundane high street kind of scenario. And suddenly something... I remember the first time I went to Oxford Street when I was about 12 or 13, and I was from Birmingham. So to come to London was basically a whole big thing. It was like a day out. Oh, Big Ben, and you know, you go to London, Buckingham Palace. And for some reason, I was with a friend, and we were going around Oxford Street. And of course, what you do, you hear, see the Harry Narm. What is that? But it was cool. You accept it because you see it. Well, it's part of the London scene. It must be cool because it's happening in London. And you hear the holy name, and then someone gave me a curious little sweet and a curious little bag. I took it, and you know, my nature is I just ate it. Ate first, ask questions later, you know. You know, so in other words, prasad distribution. Yeah, so preaching, even if someone's a gardener, for example, in one sense, you know, looking after the... Or look at what someone's done to the prasad room over there. They've brought Vrindavan to the... So that's actually a form of preaching as well, you see. Yeah.
No, definitely, I agree. Yeah. That's what I mentioned. So, yeah. But should we make arrangements so that regardless of what service people are doing, regardless of what types of preaching people are doing, that still everyone goes out on the streets together and chants Hari Nam? Is that something that we should aspire to do?
Because I think we should aspire to do it more than we're doing. But if one cannot, or one is busy with another service, it's not that we pull people away from other services, because as we discussed, they are also directly or indirectly part of the Sankirtan movement. Just like, for example, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would come home to the house of Haridas Thakur or whoever it was at the time, there'll be people cooking prasadam and chapatis and all things like that. And imagine that. Imagine the bliss, actually, or the privilege of cooking for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who then giving him energy to then go out and do another 4 hours Harinam Sankirtan the next day or the same day. So that's also just like a car. You know, you've got the driver of the car, you've got the steering wheel, you've got the tyres, you've got the seats. Have you ever tried driving a car with the seat completely back, so it's flat? You can't. You haven't tried it because it's impossible. Because what would happen is you would need the steering wheel, you'd just fall back. You wouldn't be able to use the pedals. It's really, don't do it, by the way. Don't try this at home. So in other words, just a simple thing like a car seat, which isn't a mechanical thing. It's just a mechanical thing. It's not actually directly moving the car forward, but you can't do anything without the car seat. So similarly, the car has different parts, but it's all contributing towards the mission. And if you take any of those car parts away, then the mission is compromised. If you haven't got the wing mirrors, it's dangerous and it won't get through its MOT anyway. Or if you haven't got the car seat, if you haven't got a steering wheel, then it's extremely dangerous. Or the brake, you see? However, the outside of the car, I guess, is what people, the general public see. Those who are not going to come and take darshan, come to the festivals or take, or whatever, will be able to hear the holy names of the Lord in the form of the Harinam Sankirtan mission. Therefore, Ananta Purushottam Prabhu, who does a lot of, he's kind of oversees, I think, a lot of the Bhaktam Tamanas thing on the Saturday mornings and afternoons. He says he what keeps him going is when he goes to a new town or a new village that he hasn't been to before. And there's a taste for that, there's a real taste. Because Watford or central London, these type of places, were kind of known by most people. Oh yeah, it's the Harriers, you know. But to go to kind of like a small town or village somewhere and watch people's reactions, you know, is there's a taste in actually experiencing that. And people like it as well. Do you want to add anything to this, Pippa? Because you've got more experience than I have, actually. Yeah, go on, share a few words of wisdom. Please.
Well, I mean, here's an observation. Just when lockdown was easing, the temple was still closed, and the Saturday night Harinama started. Probably because the temple was closed, a lot of devotees were getting their association and their devotional service going on Harinam Sankirtan. So we had like 150 devotees going out on Sankirtan. But it made me realize that having, as you pointed out, this is a big hub for preaching. All the services are, there's a lot of preaching going on here. But as a result, it's drawing everyone's energy. So there's less, the Harinam Sankirtan is less when the temples are fully open. So there's this, so from the point of view of of who's, if people are already Krishna conscious, then obviously they're going to get more Krishna consciousness coming here. But for the people that are just totally clueless, in some sense it was actually beneficial that the temples were closed, because devotees were now interfacing with the public more. So that's just one aspect of it.
Yeah, it's really interesting, because we've got to remember that... is this a comment that we can see here? It's an observation. Okay. Be merciful to us. Be merciful to us.
To see the diversity of Prabhupada's mission now, and what has happened during COVID as well, it's awe-inspiring, actually. From what's come from the manor staying open for darshan, or wasn't open for a short while, certain things happened. The people that were no longer allowed to come here, they were doing food or prasadam distribution. They were doing it from the school, the Krishnavanti. So all the devotees that were normally, say, doing the shop prasad, cooking and the thing, they were all out on prasadam distribution. You know, it just created another way of where they could stay in service, actually. And not only that, you can see now the expansion of Prabhupada's mission, like through the education system, Krishnavanti school. You just see what the seeds of planting have been planted, and it's now expanding even more. And certainly with this College of Vedic Studies, it's involving so many people. And also, wherever, you know, just from my point of view, if I go around Tulsi, half the time I could say that when I'm chanting around Tulsi, people are talking to me and I'm talking to them. And they're always asking questions. They're always inquisitive. And they've got dilemmas, you know. And so... it's a subtle thing. What you conceive is not happening, is happening, but you can't see it. So, but if you have this understanding that you can see, especially to keep the place now open in such a way that all the congregation, they're getting prasad, you know, but so many people now are getting involved, you know, with this manor as a centre, and education. So it's... because we don't see it, it doesn't mean that it's happening in so many ways. So many ways. Like, I met a lady down the thing. She's now interested in getting Gujarati books. This is around Tulsi, because she likes Tulsi. She wants Bhagavatam set. You know, but she wants it in Gujarati. All these things are happening because of it's just been available through Divyanam, people like that. They're trying to expand this this book distribution in different ways. And so we've got to be careful not making an assumption that it's not happening. Because you'd be surprised how many sort of people are now just talking about Krishna consciousness.
I think...
that's it, really.
No, thank you for sharing. I was just saying, I think that what's also happened during the lockdown was the increase of our online presence as well, whether it was Zoom or whether it was social media or live feeds and so forth. And even 10 years ago, it may have been difficult for us to imagine how everyone in the world or every town and village could engage in the holy name. But now with technology that wasn't around just, you know, 15, 20 years ago, what to speak of during the time of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, we can now actually begin to... Actually, this is going to happen. And you were talking a little bit about the lockdown period and where people were pining actually for association and so forth outside of the temple. I think what this shows you is that Krishna consciousness is a surviving thing. It's flexible. It can take on different forms. So in times of crisis, when we know that it, not only will it survive, it will thrive, because then the general public will start to look at other ways of looking at life. A lot of the civilization we live in is very, very fragile. Our environment is fragile, as the politicians are going to be discussing in the COP26 in Glasgow over the next 7 days. All the world's leaders are coming together to Glasgow to discuss the environment and global warming and climate change and how to reduce carbon emissions and all this stuff. But the problem is the whole network that everyone is relying on is actually very, very fragile, and it could actually snap overnight. If it's, you know, that we call it the straw that breaks the camel's back, could actually be very, very difficult. But it does not apply to Krishna consciousness, because it has something, because it's human, and the more that people realize that the flaws of the materialistic civilization we live in, the more people will actually come to start to ask questions, actually, and start to want answers. So I think today, more than ever, we can actually see the predictions of Mahaprabhu and Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and of course Srila Prabhupada and Bhaktisiddhanta and so forth, of this whole every town and village in the world. We can actually see how it's going to happen. We hope that it will happen with as least suffering as possible, but it will happen regardless anyway. It cannot be stopped, as they say. But everything is, but in a peaceful way, of course, not in a militaristic way or fanatic way, but in a nice way for everybody. Okay, I've got to stop at 9. Any last 1 minute comments or? Yeah, pass the mic, please. Yeah, this will be the last comment, and I think we'll finish, if you don't mind.
I think Srila Prabhupada's purport also gives us a good clue into how Prabhupada saw Lord Nityananda's prediction happening. And Prabhupada talks about the distribution of literature. And Prabhupada emphasized the Brihat Mridanga. You know, the small mridanga and kartals will reach a certain distance. A Prabhupada's vision, which seems to be also displayed in the purport, that Prabhupada saw the distribution of literature also expanding the chanting. They will get the literature in that village. Those people will take up the chanting by reading Prabhupada's books. I just want to make that point.
And what did Prabhupada say the printing press was? This is the Brihat Mridanga. So once again, an example of how things can take different forms. So a printing press can be engaged in Krishna service. That is non different from a Brihat Mridanga, as it were. So in this way, we can be open-minded to different types of services. But at the same time, as we've listened to today, we should never lose sight of the traditional public chanting of the holy name of the Lord. Thank you very much indeed. Hare Krishna. Yeah.